And all of a sudden, boom, 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 boom. That's it.
Salty Studio Cast.
Dave Stewart, it's a great honor for me to talk to you. You're not only known for the Eurythmics hits and all your other songs, you're also known as a producer for many famous artists. So you're often in the studio, but now you're coming to Switzerland to play live on Art on Ice. What excites you about it?
Yeah, I've been wanting to play live, you know. I used to play for fun, you know, at the Troubadour, like once every 3 months or whatever, and have different people, guests and stuff. And I used to like to play live, like the Spiritual Cowboys when I had that band. I love playing live, but see, for a long time, Annie didn't ever want to tour. So when I thought about it, I thought, God, that's like 130 songs or something I've written with Annie and produced all of them. And I need to play, you know, I love playing. So then Nile Rodgers, he asked me, would I play in London at the Royal Festival Hall at the end of the festival of called Meltdown and play Eurythmics songs? So that was the perfect opportunity for me to go, ah, that'll be interesting with guests, you know. But I had to call it something, so I called it Eurythmics Songbook. And then when I looked back through the albums, which I hadn't listened to for years, and I realized all these songs, and that I remember the moment every song it came on, I remember exactly where I was, who was in the room producing it, Annie and I writing it. I remember everything about it. So putting the show together was great because I was choosing female musicians of a certain kind that can play all these different genres. And so I found it fascinating. And now we've rehearsed and it sounds amazing. And every song that I start to play, it's like flashbacks. It's like, boom, you know.
Well, that's what happens. Do you connect songs to stories and things you experienced?
Well, like everybody does when something comes on the radio, you know, whatever it is, whether it's Lord, Royal, or whether it's, you know, U2, whether Streets Have No Name or whatever. Songs come on and they have a certain familiarity to you personally. It's interesting because every song has a different meaning, I mean, feeling to every single part of the audience or listener. They all feel something, but all slightly different depending on when they heard it.
Yes.
Or where they were, you know. Somebody's at college and the first time they hear Sweet Dreams, they're at a college get together, you know. Or I was in London and a guy said to me, oh, he was watching MTV when he was 10 years old, his mum let him watch it, and Sweet Dreams, the video came on, and he was so scared of it because it had a cow come in. So everybody has a different take, but you see, for me, obviously having been through the whole process of the writing, the producing, in very different places, you know, because I would never do anything straightforward. I would go, right, let's get this 8-track tape recorder and go to the suburbs of Paris and rent a little room and make, you know, There Must Be an Angel, Would I Lie to You, in a tiny room, you know.
Yes, you recorded in tiny rooms and big castles.
Yeah, because you see, a bit like Brian Eno's Oblique Strategies, I was saying the place that you're doing something has a massive effect on what you're doing. And also, Annie and I didn't try to write songs. We just had experiences, and then as soon as we were together, they just came, like, boom, 20 minutes.
So it took 20 minutes to write Sweet Dreams.
Yeah, and Here Comes the Rain Again, and Would I Lie to You, and There Must Be an Angel. All of them, you know, 45 minutes at the most. If we were going on past 40 minutes, we'd go, something wrong with this song.
Yeah. So you said in your book that all those Eurythmic songs were built around Annie's voice.
Well, yeah, I wanted to put Annie's voice very loud, right front and center. And then it's quite a complicated technical question, but I would make sure that the EQ was not interfering with any other instrument or her voice. So when you hear a Eurythmics record on the radio or even Sweet Dreams, everybody goes, wow, it's like so crystal clear. Because I would make sure in the panning in stereo, things were moved a tiny bit there and there, so that every instrument had its own space. And there was not a lot of instruments. So Annie's voice would be right front and center. And any harmonies that she did, I would make sure they were in their own space too. So it doesn't matter which song you put on, when it comes on, you go, oh, I can hear everything crystal clear. Nothing is competing with it, you know, and musically. So, you know, I suppose if you listen to reggae music, okay, so nothing's interfering. The bass is playing very small amount of notes, and the drummer is doing, and then the keyboard player, Bob Marley's, is doing his thing in the guitar, and not one is interfering with the other one. Well, I was always trying to do that.
And what you also do is you use the studio as an instrument. Is it something you took from Conny Planck?
Yeah. Conny Planck, German producer from Siegbert, well, he's actually from Neunkirchen near Cologne. And he was very experimental in Cannes, the German group. So he was working with Holger Suchai, Marcus Stockhausen, first Eurythmics album, Conny Planck. And Conny showed me, because he built his own desk, and he was showing me that there are no rules. So I would say I want it to sound like somebody's fallen down a well or whatever, you know. And we would go with a microphone and outside, and just everything was an experiment. So I learned so much from him that when on the Sweet Dreams album I produced it myself, I just experimented. So I had, you know, a tape echo delay, and I would let it go on and on into infinity and not worry that it goes. It all became part of the sound.
So you say in your book as well that you have to create chaos around an artist to get great songs. Mm-hmm. So that's what you do.
Well, you see, there's something about the art of chaos, right? So in the center of it all, there's a kind of bit like in the center of a hurricane or whatever, there's this very sort of quiet part. And it's kind of a lot of energy is whizzing around it. But in the center of it, it's very still, right? So you don't want to be on the outside going. And this happens to a lot of people and a lot of bands, a lot of people's lives. They're on this outside going whizzing around. But in the center, there's something magical happens, and it's about allowing the magical thing to happen. So instead of sitting thinking for 8 hours with a piano, you're in the center of this energy, and you then just allow the song in, or allow the idea in, or whatever it is. And I call it the space between your thoughts. So a lot of the time, see, people's voices are in their head are chattering. Like, oh, did I leave the door open? Did I feed the dog? There's so many things going on. But if you can just slowly fade them out till you're in sort of right in the middle of the kind of space, then the song just comes, or the idea comes. For an example, say, for instance, you're with your friends in a bar or something, and somebody goes, oh, God, what's that song by the Beatles again? It's like, and everybody's trying to think of it. And you go, and then nobody can think of it. And you're driving home, not thinking of it. And you go, Eleanor Rigby. It just comes because you may be hypnotized by the white line on the road, You're just going in a bit of a dream. Now, the same thing happens when you're watching a football match or players in a football match. They might be running around and all of a sudden something magic happens. Somebody gets the ball here, somebody runs there, and the whole audience can tell. They all, oh, like this. And that moment is the same as jamming. Oh. You see, because he can't shout to the guy, hey, run over there, you know. They're doing it together like a shoal of fish, you know. Now, jamming, which I love doing, I'll be playing something, bass player's playing, drummer's playing, keyboard player, saxophone, whatever. I can't say, hey, guys, I'm going to play F sharp minor now and then A diminished, because the whole jam would stop. But I might do that, and everybody just seems to follow it, right? Because everybody's in the zone, in that space between your thoughts. And Quincy Jones and I talk a lot about that. There's lots of words for it, you know, getting in the zone or all this kind of stuff. But not many people do that, I think, in songwriting. So what I would do when all the chaos around was getting in the zone, in the space, songwriting. So we'd go in the room with no song, you know. We haven't made a song, let's record it. We're in that space, just Annie and I, nobody else. Annie might have a journal. She's been writing day to day. She's shown me some of the journal. Two lines, four lines. Wow, that's amazing, Annie. Put it back, let's play something. And all of a sudden, boom, 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 boom. That's it.
Could you explain what makes a good song? Is it something you could put in words?
Well, that's, you know, what makes a good song for one person might not be a song somebody else likes. But the basics of having a song that connects with people, I think it has to have either an element of joy or melancholy. You have to decide which, because obviously I know as a composer, if I want to make people feel melancholy, I know exactly what chord and notes to put together. And I can alter one note and it's not melancholy, you know. Take a song like Here Comes the Sun by George Harrison. Okay, perfect song, right? And it's very joyful and very up. And he's actually saying, here comes the sun. But then he says, it's been in a long and lonely winter. It's like coming out of something, but here comes the sun. And, you know, many songs that explain, you can't be all Disney and like, here comes the sun, everything's great, hooray, hooray. It's, for me, a perfect song is in reality, where it's going, there's dark things and there's positive things. There's a sense of hope, and beyond hope, there's hope. And then musically, you reinforce that. And any song you hear like that, going all the way back to Etta James singing Out Last, all the way through to the newest artist coming out, Vampire by Olivia Rodrigo, you know, they've really gone into this zone. Now, Etta James, funny enough, obviously she didn't write At Last. Yeah. It was written by a Polish man. But that thing of the interpreting of the song is so important too. I mean, how Frank Sinatra would get a song and then turn it into his. Mm-hmm. You immediately think of him. That's a whole other thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And how, like this morning I woke up, every day there's somebody recording Sweet Dreams in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Choirs, orchestras, death metal bands, right?
Yeah.
And they all have their own thing going on, you know? Mm-hmm. And then every now and then there's one of them that's like, oh, that's really interesting, very spooky. Okay. And so songs that last, you know, for years, you tend to find that people are singing them in karaoke bars, they're still on the radio, And I was saying earlier, I think what's happened, everything in life has got kind of separated in choices. it's kind of like 1984 by George Orwell, where they are deciding at 5 years old, 11 years old, oh yeah, these kids are going to be a plumber, or this one, or a, you know, work in a factory, or these ones we're going to go here, and therefore we're going to make stuff for these people, and make stuff for these people. They've done that with music, so they go, okay, now this is indie folk music, this is alternative rock music, this is what, it never was like that. We just hear ABBA on the radio, followed by the Rolling Stones, followed by, you know, it was just, and I think people trying to force people into these specific genres yes. of life is a very dangerous thing. Yeah. That's when you get really bad little groups, you know, and YouTube created an algorithm that you're watching something and of course the next thing comes across. Now the guy, he's a French guy who invented that algorithm. He realized, oh, it was a really bad thing because if they're watching something very extreme in a bad way, it'll put another extreme thing in a bad way.
Yes,
and then the person goes down the black hole, or maybe as they get run off and join ISIS or something. Mm-hmm. So he went back to Google and YouTube and said, I've fixed it. I've got the algorithm. That'll show you, oh, the other side point of view. It's still connected.
Yeah.
And they said, great, but we don't want that. And they sacked him. We want them to go down this hole.
Oh, a song, I guess, can develop if it's a song by another person. And maybe this is something that happens now when you perform. I guess it's Vanessa Amorosi, your daughter Kaya.
Yeah.
And Ra.
Yeah.
So they put another dimension to the...
Yeah, because they have three different voices. And we were very fortunate, Eurythmics, like David Bowie. We just would change our genres. We didn't stick in any particular thing. So Sweet Dreams, people thought, oh, that's an electronic album. Yeah, it still got me recording train wheels and slide guitar and trumpets. But then on Touch, Here Comes the Rain Again, full orchestra. By the time we got to Be Yourself Tonight and onwards, we playing Stax soul music, gospel music, sisters are doing it for themselves. And so it's great with the three singers, you know, Vanessa Amorosi, Ra, and actually my daughter Kaya have different sounding voices. My daughter's very soulful, emotional. Ra is soulful, but she's more of a power singer. And Vanessa Amorosi is like a rocker, mm-hmm. right? So depending on what song we're playing, one will step forward and the other two will be the backing. And it has a great feeling. It's like all the girl players, it just moves along and the audience doesn't get lost in the types of music. And when we made those albums, the audience stayed with us all the way through. Even all our albums were so different to the one before. And Bowie, you know, he didn't want to be Ziggy Stardust all the time. And, you know, later he'd do Young Americans or... And I think a lot of bands and artists do get stuck. They've made four albums yeah. of this thing. And if they suddenly said, oh, we're making a folk album now, yeah. their fans are like, whoa.
So, and the instruments, are they still the same? Do you still use the old? I think you had the prototype, right? Mm-hmm.
This is the first time yes. mm-hmm. I've ever seen anybody with a picture of, that is our one.
Oh, yeah.
That's the only one with the wood.
The only one that exists.
Wood.
I got it from the internet somewhere.
Right, well, mm-hmm. these ones later on, mm-hmm. this is the prototype.
Mm-hmm.
Do you mind if I take a picture of that?
You can have it. I have it
really?
Digitally, yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Mm. That was on top of there.
Mm.
And all you could see on here was little black and white, almost like a heart monitor.
Yeah.
You know, like at the hospital. And this here, it's so amazing. That knob there, you could tune. You could choose a drum and tune it all the way down. And that was the beginning of Sweet Dreams, which that...
Something was running backwards or something?
Well, I turned the drum as low as it would go.
Yeah.
And I put a four on the floor, boom, boom. And this was coming in on the one. Dum, 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 mm-hmm. dum, dum.
Yeah, I saw the other song session where you explained everything.
Yeah, and all of a sudden, and I didn't explain on there that, you see, this called On The One, it comes from James Brown, so created that in a dance way. Yeah, get up, get on up. It's like, boom. Da, 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 da. Whereas Michael Jackson and all the dance music was on the two. Boom, ka, ka, ka. So it's like, you know, Beat It or Billie Jean is boom.
So they see Sweet Dreams also as one of the milestones of electronic, of synth pop. And you did this manifesto where you say we want to put electronics and soul in front. So how can you?
Yeah, we wrote, Annie and I decided, because we'd been in another group and we found that.
The tourists.
Yeah, nobody would listen to our idea. There was an engineer and a producer. And when nobody was around, we did one song on the tourists together, and it was a B-side, and it was called Luminous. No, it was called Song from the Middle Room, because the middle room was Annie and I, where we slept in a squat. And it really is experimental. It's electronic, and it was in Montserrat, and nobody was around, and we just did it, and it came out on this colored vinyl plastic, and not many people would know or mentioned that, but it's the beginning of Eurythmics. But so yeah, we knew that we had something, but we didn't know what it was. We didn't write any songs together in a tourist, and we lived together as a couple. We didn't write any songs each or together. But soon as we decided not to live together and we were away from the tourists, it was an explosion of songs, you know.
And it lasts until today. Now when you perform in Switzerland again in February, there will be done with ice skating. So what do you think?
I know, wild. Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, I've been working with theatre and I've been working actually with a company called Dragon, which is Cirque du Soleil. I'm making something called I Am Violin. It's a very, it's the story of all music, you know, but used with visuals. And I also, I went to the premiere, you know, with Olivia Harrison and Paul McCartney and everything, to the Beatles Love show, you know, this interpretation of songs. But this is very interesting because we are playing live while it's happening. In all those shows, it's not them playing live, it's not the people, it's happening, coming from a recording or whatever. And I was talking to, I think Oliver, is it the chap who created?
Rito, yes.
Yeah, yeah. He was explaining that when you're playing live and it's quite loud and you can feel it's live, the ice skaters, and they go very different to when it's just through a little speaker, tannoy thing. And also, it's not going to be exactly the same every time. You know, it's not like playing, here's a tape and they've worked it out exactly. And, you know, as you know, there's something different about live music. So I had a big meeting last night with them. I don't know what they thought, because I was talking a lot of time about voodoo, you know, about blues music and voodoo and Grigri, and the thing that really made me get into music and inspired me, and how it's running through Sweet Dreams and all these things. And I don't want to give away what they're going to do, but I was making them think and look at these voodoo symbols and stuff like this. And, you know, because, you know, Robert Johnson, King of the Delta Blues Singers, Mississippi John Hurt, you know, Muddy Waters, all of these artists instilled in me this feeling. It's not just the ability to play the blues, but the feeling of that, which can then, I then feel it in some classical music, I can feel it in other music, and when I feel it, I like it. I don't care who the band is, I just like that feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. And then I saw that you did another project, which is called the Time Experience Project.
Yeah, no, that's I'm writing a feature film.
Yeah.
And before that, I made a 30-minute film. And this 30-minute film is called Who to Love. And I made it with the music I made with the guys who did all the music for Gamora and, you know, their composers in Italy. They only make instrumental music, and I chopped it all up like Bowie and made songs on top all about time. So every song, like the first song is called The Time is a Masterpiece. And it's about...
Listen to it, it's great.
Yeah, thanks. It's very unusual stuff, and it's about what, you know, the illusion of time, basically, which is philosophers, scientists, whatever. But that thing that I'm speaking, it's already in the past. So then it's like, okay, so what is memory? What is now? And then to how some people, so I manifested that, or I used it as a metaphor, the actress is on stage being filmed with us in the band, but she keeps, for a second, she's in an apartment. And it's like, you know, disassociation, you know, out of body experience. But every now and then you see the clock. Now, it seems to be a long time in that apartment, but the second has only moved one, you know? And then she's back singing again. And in the apartment, she could hear the music. It's almost like she's nearly in touch with reality. And then behind a sort of picture, she can see herself through there. Now, I suppose it's like the doors of perception and all of this, and Pasolini's and the Fellinis and all these movie makers were looking at things from a different perspective. So that's what I was doing, and I made that as a music-driven 8-song film. But now I'm writing the script of the feature film of that character, who it actually happens to and goes more and more.
I saw the trailer with the hole, and it's
yeah, it's cool, isn't it?
Yeah,
and she's sort of trying to get back to it. Yeah.
One other question is, what's your connection to Switzerland?
I've got lots of connections to Switzerland. Great memories. Annie and I being photographed by Claude Gassien, one of my favorite photographers. Here, I played Balois 20 years ago. Eurythmics have played here many times. My strong connection at the moment is I have a partner in Switzerland. He's called Johan. And together, we're both crazy love martinis, right? So from very early on, I think it's in my book, in Paris, I have my first martini at La Coupole, when La Coupole was this, before it was taken over, in Montparnasse. Now, so I've now got my own vodka, and it's called Poetry. And my partner is here in Switzerland, Johan. And we went to Poland together, and we went to a special family that's 3 generations, and they have fields of wheat that go back to the 16th century, making. And we did blind tests, you know, of all the vodka. Hey, do you know where my phone is? I want to show him something. And so I started to sort of make this idea that I would have my own vodka. Okay. And then I would connect it to the arts. So I just did something with Freeze Art Fair in London.
This is something you could buy now?
You can get it in Switzerland,
Okay.
I'll show you. And honestly, the very dangerous thing about having your own vodka. But I only ever have one martini at exactly the same time every night. So
8:30.
Yes. How did you know that? It's probably in the book.
Yes. So no, it was on the video on the other side, other songs video, that's why I
said. Oh right. Oh yeah, so yeah, poetry, yes. Search. So this is my vodka there. See, it's got my hat on, yeah.
Oh, that's great. Oh, you had, yes, great.
Yeah.
So one last question. Now we are experiencing the rise of artificial intelligence. What do you think about it? How will it change songwriting forever and music?
Well, can't see one of my best friends. He died about 4 years ago. Was Paul Allen, who was, you know, the other side of Microsoft with Bill Gates.
Yes.
So he gave me my first laptop in 1992 or something like this. And I'd have all these conversations with him about it. And it was already inside of lots of things, artificial intelligence, quite a long time ago. So I knew this thing was coming and it was getting more and more. And people were saying, hey, you know, I don't really like this thing in my house that's answering me and recording my voice and so forth. But now it's at the stage where exponential, you know, and so it's not anything that anybody can stop. People keep talking about, well, we must get control over this. And it's like, no, it's going to be there. They can make rules or whatever you want. But what are they trying to control? It's everybody's computer in the world and everybody's information, and it's just going into a big brain.
Yeah.
So now I think Joe Walsh said a very funny thing. He was asked that question and he said, well, I'm not going to be worried till I can smash up a hotel room and throw the TV out the window into the pool. But you know, yes, I mean, people are writing songs, you know. As a writer who writes poetry, you could type in some poetry and artificial intelligence will add some suggestions. Oh, that's good, that's good. So it's like being an editor now. And then you can go to something else and go, I want the melody to be sad and this and that. Mm-hmm. And it'll put it all together. Now, will it be Leonard Cohen? I'm not sure about that.
Salty Studio Cast.